Good evening for WBAI News in New York. I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Monday, November 7th, 2016. With hours to go until the election, anxiety is high throughout the country, and it doesn't matter if you are voting third party or Democrat or Republican. According to the American Psychological Association, the election is a significant source of stress for more than half of us. And as Navjot Kaur tells us, for voters in Queens, optimism is in short supply.
Despair and pessimism is what voters in Queens are expressing just days before the presidential election between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Even though Trump carried Queens in the Republican primary, voters aren't convinced he will be on their side if he gets elected president. Nowhere more was that evident than in the hostility and antagonism expressed by voters' approach to discuss their thoughts on this election. Some voters were opting out of voting entirely because they feel neither the Democrats or Republicans will be working to advance their interests. They feel whoever is in the White House, things will remain the same once the election is over. When prompted to answer questions about voting for Trump or Clinton, the standard response was, "I don't care about this," or "Stop asking me," among many others. Many voters were only voting to prevent Hillary from reaching the White House. Others, like John Creswell of Glendale, believe that it is time for Republicans to, quote, "make this country great again," and refuse to say anything more. Navjot Kaur, WBAI News, New York.
And while Donald Trump says he will make America great again, and Hillary Clinton says she will make America better, fairer, and stronger, where everyone has a chance at the American dream, political activist Mumia Abu-Jamal says, pick your devil.
I've never seen an election like this, ever. The stakes are sky high, yes, but the options are bottom low, especially for black folks. None promise relief from the hell we inhabit in communities across America. And as ever, black folks hold the key. But to what? Certainly not our freedom. Mass incarceration is still a foreboding shadow over our lives, an incubus that sucks the lives out of millions, even after 8 years of the first black president. And cops are just wilding, a blue riot of arrogance, mayhem, in unfettered impunity, and they mostly remain as untouched as ever. Does anybody really now, we're all adults here, aren't we? Does anyone think any candidate has a clue as to how this problem can be alleviated? Have you really heard anything? Then choose your demon. Just know what you're actually choosing. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
With polls tightening around the country, it is the Latino vote which could make the difference in a Trump or Clinton presidency. In battleground states like Nevada and Colorado, the Latino vote has grown. Early voting suggests more Latinos have voted this election than in any other past election.
More than anything, we have seen that Latinos across the country are basically coming out this election season, and placing a referendum on hate and a referendum on an anti-immigrant and anti-Latino agenda.
Walter Barrientos is with Make the Road Long Island.
And that's what we have seen is motivating Latinos not only to focus on the presidential election, but also looking at the local level where anti-immigrant figures like Sheriff Arpaio in Arizona and others like him around the country and here in New York are being voted out of office, and Latinos are coming out to vote for candidates who have a different message and a different agenda of inclusion, not just for Latinos, but immigrants in general.
Maricopa County, which encompasses Phoenix, is where Sheriff Joe Arpaio has terrorized and victimized immigrants. In the red state of Arizona, he plans to deploy his deputies at polling stations on Election Day. It's a move voting rights activists warn amounts to intimidation.
Sheriff Arpaio, you know, much like, you know, folks may remember, County Executive Steve Levy in Suffolk County were two of the figures in the early 2000s who basically made a name for themselves at the national level for vilifying immigrants and going above and beyond their powers in making sure that Latinos felt intimidated and that they they, you know, that they basically embarrassed Latinos and immigrants. You know, Arpaio is not only under multiple federal investigations, as far as I know, but among the things that he's known for was making immigrants sleep in tents because he didn't believe that he said he didn't believe they were worthy of the detention facilities where their rights and humanity as inmates was protected. And he did other things like making inmates, particularly male inmates, wear pink underwear because that was, you know, those were just two of the things that I think many people know around the country he did to dehumanize immigrants. And we're seeing Latinos coming out to vote against that agenda and against the belief that Latinos, whether documented or undocumented, are not worthy of human treatment and fair treatment under the law.
And to counteract this kind of anti-immigrant xenophobia, according to Barrientos, Latinos have been planning this past year to become citizens and to vote.
One of the untold stories is that for many Latinos, many people don't realize becoming a citizen is a long process, and it's an expensive process. I believe the fees now are $685. And we saw around the country and here in New York that there was a spike of 30% more people becoming citizens this past year than in prior years. And so every Latino vote, every additional vote that's going to be casted tomorrow is one where people have basically been planning on and working on for the last year and a half, because the citizenship, the naturalization process takes about a year, sometimes up to 2 years. And so many of these folks are folks that have basically been proactively planning and taking all the steps so that they can actually cast a ballot tomorrow as new citizens.
Poll watchers say whoever wins Florida wins the election. There has been a large get-out-the-vote drive in Florida where, because of the economic crisis in Puerto Rico, many have settled, including many first-time Puerto Rican voters.
I have many friends who are organizing there through a number of organizations, particularly Latino organizations. And I know that, you know, the efforts have not only been in the traditional stronghold of the Latino vote in southern Florida and the Miami-Dade area, but also along the I-5 corridor, which is where I believe they've seen the most dramatic change in the Latino population over the last 5 to 10 years, in particular in Orlando, which is, I think, the number one or number two place where the majority of Puerto Ricans that are coming from Puerto Rico in the last year or so have been settling. And so I know that the efforts have been you know, aggressive and also exciting because people are so eager to make their voices heard. And I know that for many Puerto Ricans, they feel like, you know, like voting now here in the mainland has a different importance given what they have seen happening in their state of Puerto Rico and the policies they would like to see, not just for the island, but also for their communities here. In New York, and Florida are two of the states where we have some of the largest Puerto Rican population outside of the island.
And some of our New York officials, such as New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Vividito and Council Member Nidia Velasquez, are among those who are spearheading the Get Out the Vote drive in Florida. Barriento says the exciting part of this election has been Latinos knocking on doors, getting out the vote, being involved in this election. But he says the sad part is scare tactics, which are meant to suppress the vote.
We have seen a number of mailers from the Republican Party across the state, from the state GOP, in races like the one for here on Long Island for Senate District 7, Senate District 3, and some other districts in Westchester, where they sent mailers talking about referring to immigrants as illegal. And referring to, you know, people, you can look them up online, but essentially just a very xenophobic message, a message of hatred and fear against diverse communities that we have called out and said that it's unacceptable. And so in that sense, we have seen the same tactics that we've seen Trump use to gain popularity and mobilize voters here at the local level. And that's why our members have been coming out and talking to people about our communities and the candidates that are more on the side of Latinos, of immigrants in our communities in general, and who we really are as a country.
Badiento says he has heard from voters who are afraid of what they will encounter at the polls tomorrow.
On Friday night, which is unusual, I had three voters on Long Island come to my office who said, I want to know my rights and I want to know how I prepare myself in case anything happens to me when I go to vote. And so I think what we do know is that, you know, there have been cases of intimidation. I think Republicans in particular have over the last couple of years, and in particular the last year, have made it very clear that they are eager to make it harder for Black voters and voters of color to feel intimidated about voting. And we're seeing that resonate, and we're seeing that, you know, communities of color across the country are informing themselves and going to the polls ready to make any phone calls or report any type of abuse or intimidation when it comes to voting. And we've been doing our part to inform voters in terms of, you know, how they can ensure that their vote is counted. And even if they don't appear in the polls or if there appear to be any discrepancies in how they appear in the voter rolls, that they can still cast the ballot tomorrow or contact us in the case of emergencies.
And Make the Road New York says intimidation tactics and Trump's hateful speech has been affecting the children of immigrants.
We met a number of teachers over the weekend who talked about their students, sometimes, you know, young people below 10 years old, who have been actually expressing how fearful they are because they are seeing these mailers, they are hearing about these politicians talking about these folks who are running for office, talking about their community, sometimes their classmates or their own parents, as people who are undesirable in our communities. And that's sending a really clear message, and not just to the voters, but just, you know, this new generation of young people who have had to be exposed to hatred in a very real way. And teachers were telling us how they've been trying to handle it, because some young people, but some other students, particularly in districts across the island, are having a lot of anxiety because they were born here, but their parents, either usually one or two of their parents are undocumented or mixed immigration status. And so there are very real fears that these things are tapping into in many of our young people.
And Badiento says the mainstream media hasn't done its part in highlighting Trump's message of hate and xenophobia that local officials have been relying on in these last hours before the election. He points to a local congressional race, which is cause for concern. It pits Tom Suozzi against Jack Martins.
Jack Martins represents some of the most diverse communities across on Long Island. It's sort of the center of Nassau County, where it meets New York City. And he has run on an anti-immigrant, anti-worker, and anti-working families agenda. He opposed an increase to the minimum wage. He has opposed all legislation that was in favor or protected the rights of immigrant families. He has made it very clear that he is not for many of the working families of his district. And on the other hand, we have Tom Suozzi, who was a former county executive, and as such, started a number of initiatives in favor of integrating immigrants better into their community, and is running on an agenda in support of a number of issues, including education funding, which is critical to many Latino and immigrant communities on Long Island, and other working class communities. He's running for that seat, and it's one of the most competitive seats on the island. We were just out there with them, many of our members who have endorsed Tom Suozzi campaigning for him, because they know that the difference between the two candidates, it's almost as stark as it is at the national level with our presidential candidate.
Another congressional race Make the Road has been focusing on is in Suffolk County between Lee Zeldin and Anna Throne Holst. Zeldin, who was one of the first to invite others to line up with Trump, hosted a number of Trump fundraisers. Another race they're watching is with New York State Senator Tom Croce. He's from Long Island, and he has voted to strip away immigrant protections. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. And while most electoral contests tomorrow are focused on Democrats versus Republicans, in parts of New York, there is another consideration. Richard Barr reports.
So in most places on the national, state, and local maps, voters are considering voting for the Democrat, the Republican, or maybe the Green or the Libertarian. In New York's state Senate races, in five districts in the city, one in the suburbs and one upstate, there are six Democrats who belong to the Independent Democratic Conference, or IDC, which caucuses with the Republicans in the Senate, not with the Democrats. There's one who caucuses with the Republicans on his own. They are Jeff Klein from the Bronx, Diane Savino from Staten Island, Tony Avella from Queens, Simcha Felder from Brooklyn, Marisol Alcantara running for a vacant seat in Manhattan with the promise to join the IDC, and the two from out of the city, David Carlucci from Rockland and David Valesky from Central New York State. If these folks had been caucusing with the other Democrats in the Senate during the last few years, the Dems would have formed a majority and might have also passed legislation which the Democratic majority in the State Assembly was willing to pass, such as ending vacancy decontrol of rent-regulated apartments in the city and limiting yearly rent increases for rent-control tenants to the smaller percentages that rent-stabilized tenants have had to pay. Also, campaign finance reform, ethics reform, prison reform, same-day registration and early voting, and the DREAM Act, providing a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. Governor Cuomo has not pushed the renegades very hard to vote with their Democratic colleagues, and Democratic Party chairs in the five boroughs have neither denied them the party's nomination nor run anyone against them. And so we New Yorkers, who want these pieces of legislation to pass, are left hoping that something in tomorrow's election results will push the renegades to change course. Richard Barr, WBAI News, New York.
Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders has been campaigning for Hillary Clinton to stop Donald Trump. Speaking to a crowd in North Carolina recently, he said Clinton will overturn Citizens United. He said, "We are going to fight for democracy. We are not going to become an oligarchy." And he's been speaking out against voter suppression.
When we talk about democracy, which after all is what this country is about, we have cowardly Republican governors all over this country trying to suppress the votes. Hillary Clinton and I believe that our job is to get more people to participate in the political process, not fewer people. And I say, look, in a democracy, honest people can have different points of view. Secretary Clinton has conservative friends. I have conservative friends. That's democracy. But what is not democracy is when cowardly governors go out of their way to make it difficult for people to vote. And I say to those governors, if you don't have the guts to participate in a free, open, and fair election, get out of politics and get another job.
And Sanders says the economy has much improved in the last 8 years under President Obama.
Let us also acknowledge that while unemployment has gone way lower today than it was when President Obama came to office, we have also got to acknowledge that the economy is nowhere where we want it to be, and that millions of our brothers and sisters in this country are hurting financially. That is a fact. And let us acknowledge and not be afraid to put it out on the table and to say that over the last 40 years, what we have seen is a middle class in this country which is shrinking, where people in North Carolina and Vermont and all over this country are today working not one job, but two or three jobs to cobble together the income and the health care that they need. Let us be honest and acknowledge there are millions of working families desperately looking for decent, quality, affordable child care. Let us be honest and acknowledge that millions of older workers are moving into retirement, but they have absolutely no savings and they are very scared about their future. That is the reality, and we can't hide it.
On Sunday, Sanders campaigned for Clinton in the battleground state of Nevada. He urged undecided voters to take a hard look at the issues, warning of climate change. He said Nevada could produce an unbelievable amount of renewable energy with the sun. Driving around upstate New York, Bernie Sanders stickers are still on the bumpers of local trucks, and Bernie signs still line the roads. And then there are dueling signs posted for Republican John Faso and Democrat Zephyr Teachout, both running for Congress. Sanders says Teachout is running against an ex-lobbyist for payday lenders and a fracking company who is supported by four billionaire-funded super PACs. Faso has sought to distance himself from Trump. At a recent debate in Woodstock, he said, "I don't think I'm any more responsible for what Donald Trump says than my opponent is responsible for Clinton's email server." According to a Siena College poll, Faso is leading Teachout 48-42%. The race is to replace retiring Republican Congressmember Chris Gibson. And besides state and national races, voters in 35 states will be considering 154 ballot measures. This year's issues include loosening marijuana rules, health care reform, revoking the death penalty, increasing minimum wage, condoms, taxes, and solar panels. Rebecca Miles has more.
Of the 154 measures, 71 were put on the ballot by citizens. Only half the states allow citizens to collect signatures on petitions from voters for a ballot measure to be considered. The other way a ballot measure is included is through legislative referrals. Nine states involving 82 million residents could loosen rules on marijuana. Voters in Arkansas, Florida, Montana, and North Dakota will decide whether residents can use the herb legally. Arizona, California, Maine, and Nevada voters will decide whether to legalize marijuana for those under the age of 21. And Massachusetts voters will decide whether to regulate marijuana like alcohol. Election watchers said the marijuana measure in Florida and Nevada could certainly boost voter turnout in those two swing states. So far, 25 states and the District of Columbia have passed legislation allowing marijuana for medical use. Alaska, Colorado, Oregon, and Washington have also decriminalized marijuana for recreational use, allowing products to be sold to people 21 and older. And how about the money? In February, the Colorado Department of Revenue said government license stores made nearly $1 billion in 2015, and the state's gross revenue had increased 78% since the first year the drug was legalized, giving the state $135 million in taxes and fees. Concerning minimum wage, voters in five states will consider increasing or decreasing the minimum wage, which could affect 21.6 million residents. Voters in Arizona, Colorado, and Maine will decide whether to increase the minimum wage to $12 by 2020. Residents in Washington will decide whether to raise theirs to $13.50. But in the state of South Dakota, residents will decide whether they should take off a dollar of minimum wage paid to anyone under the age of 18. Four states will consider gun control measures. Among them, voters in California can support a measure that would involve background checks for ammunition purchases and a ban on large-capacity ammunition magazines. Maine and Nevada voters will decide whether there should be background checks for gun sales. Interesting and unusual ballot measures. Voters in Florida will vote on Amendment 1 concerning the rights for solar panels. The cost of installing solar panels is not cheap. In many states, customers lease the panels through a third party and sell excess electricity back to the utility grid. Ironically, the Sunshine State is one of five that doesn't allow third-party ownership. It allows third-party leasing, but not third-party power purchase agreements. Under Amendment 1, it would allow solar leasing through the utility companies, making solar affordable for many consumers, but would not address third-party PPAs. And under the amendment, the utility companies would be compensated for their solar losses by adding new fees to solar consumers' bills. Critics have argued that the amendment represents a quick death for the future of solar power in the Sunshine State. In Colorado, voters will decide whether porn actors will be required to wear condoms during filming under Proposition 60. And Californians will also decide whether to ban plastic shopping bags under Proposition 67. In Colorado, they'll decide whether to override an exception to slavery prohibition for criminals, meaning that the state could not insist on convicts working for free. And Maine will decide whether to overhaul the state's voting system on the day that they vote. Rebecca Miles, WBAI News, New York.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for the day before Election Day for Monday, November 7th, 2016. The news was produced with Navjot Kaur, Richard Barr, Rebecca Miles, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.